Angela and Her Guide Friends. This is one of the first stories that Crian ever told that exemplifies a life's journey with our angel guides. Originally titled Angela the Loved, it tells about contracts, guide interaction, and the love of God by women and men in our daily lives.
Dear ones, sitting next to you and bonded to your very essence are entities whom you know as well as you know yourself. These are your guides. Some call them angels or spirit guides, and they are your best friends. They support you in times of joy and fear, and they are assigned to you for life and love you dearly. This is a story about how it all works, presented in truth and love for your learning. It seems that there were three angels. Together, they were summoned to a great meeting where a plan was taking place to create a planet of free choice. The universe needed a situation where entities would be left alone to seek their own level of vibration so that the universe, the entire universe, would measure the results after a time and know how to proceed. This, therefore, became the mechanics of a wonderful experiment of love. And the word experiment is used here only in the highest terms of honor. Angela, being one of the angels, was especially intrigued by the new planet. She heard of the plan and said, "This is truly an honorable event. I would like to be part of it." Both of her friends also decided to participate. And although it took a lot of preparation time in human terms, in universal time, being in the now, all went quickly until the planning session was before them. And so it was that Angela, her friends, and those around who had also decided to participate became part of this great event. They sat and made great contracts for themselves, for the plan was for each of the three to incarnate into this new planet. And while they were on the planet, their true identity would be completely hidden from them. In order to make the tests interact, each one that they would face was to be planned by them collectively. So Angela and her friends spent a great deal of time planning these things. The plans and the contracts were complex, for they involved many other entities besides her friends around Angela, all cooperating with the planning, all working on tests for themselves as well. Once the lessons and the tests were set up, it was time for action. Many of the entities within the planning moved into the earth plane first. Then, at the appropriate time, Angela and her two friends moved into the earth plane together. Angela had planned with the others that she would come in as a female human. In addition, the plan called for her to have the opportunity for an abusive father, and the father had agreed to play this role with her. Furthermore, Angela was to carry heavy karma, since of the three who decided to come in, Angela had the attributes of a long time cycle, her universal attribute, so she would make a perfect human with heavy karma. It was also planned that in her 13th year, there would be an appropriate test for Angela, that is, to lose her mother. Her mother's entity helped with the planning and agreed to have this attribute present itself. An abusive father and a mother's death were both very heavy attributes for a small human being and were appropriately set in place by the overall plan. It is important to note that no predestination was afoot here. These were challenges for Angela and her human family. Those who would come in and fulfill the heaviest of the challenges around her were doing so by choice and by advanced agreement. Each of them would have the option to move into or out of their own plan as they wished once they were part of Earth. Therefore, the windows of opportunity that would create these things were established by agreement. The tests were what the humans would do with each window. Full choice was the option of each human to go through the plan or not. So it was that Angela was eventually born into the earth plane, and the two angels who were her best universal friends joined her as her earth guides, each invisible, but with her in order to hold the balance of the energy while she was biologically alive. They were at her side at every step. And so Angela was born as a human in September. The plan proceeded on course, and the setups of karma and the karma of the group around her were in place. Indeed, her father played his planned role, for his karma was to be abusive to her, and so he was. Choosing in all his astral wisdom to enable Angela's karmic attributes. This was a trying time for the child Angela. She can remember hiding in a closet, hoping the father would not come home that day, sitting in the dark, shaking with fear at what might happen. He did come home, and he stormed through the house in drunken anger until he found her small, dark hiding place. And what followed for Angela was not pleasant and created an energy that stayed with her for her entire life. She remembered what he smelled like, what he sounded like, what fear felt like. Angela had the stamp of an abused child placed on her that night, and nights after that time, and time again. Angela got through it, only to find that in her 13th year, her mother died. Angela was beside herself, not knowing what to do from that point on. She felt abandoned by all. She removed herself and went to the trees and sat on a stump for a very long time, sobbing with distress at being a child with an adult burden. Her friends, her angel guides, were with her all the time, giving her energy, holding her hand, shedding tears of their own, loving her through these trials and tests of the human spirit. She made it through these times, but an interesting thing happened. Where the setup was complete as designed, and those who had agreed to supply the play around her had played their roles well, and in the process created new karma for future incarnations that they would all have too. What would Angela do with the karmic attributes of the abused father and a mother who left her early? What would it mean to her later in life? Her karmic test was generated, and it was now in place. Odd as it sounds, when Angela became an adult, the first thing she did was to find a partner who was like her father. The angel friends around her knew why this happened, and they supported her through these times. As it turned out, this partner was also abusive to her. So, as this journey goes, there was a time where the partner eventually left and Angela found herself abandoned again. Her abusive father had abandoned her in family integrity. Her mother had abandoned her in death. And now, her partner had abandoned her in love. Angela was at the crossroads of her life. Was she going to turn inward and blame God for her plight? Was she going to play the victim from now on? Angela had a choice, the kind that is the flashpoint of why she came to Earth in the first place. What she did now would make a difference for the entire planet. In the midst of this test, Angela was prompted to engage in self-examination. Her wisdom that came from having to deal with the death and abuse at an early age gave her an overview that helped to balance her reaction to her life's trials. This excited the angel guides around her. They knew that something was going to happen. Indeed, Angela started looking inward to see who she really was, and she started on a spiritual path that would eventually lead to a peaceful life and the forgiveness of those who had hurt her in so many ways. In the process, her karma was diffused, and Angela raised her vibration, which made a difference for all humans everywhere. So it was that Angela died in her 83rd year, having completed an incarnation on Earth that was valuable to her and to the whole. Her self-discovery had incrementally raised the vibration of the planet, and she was peaceful with her death. Dear ones, here is where the story gets good. For after the death experience and the trip to the cave, Angela passed into a great hall of honor. You humans here have never seen anything like this on Earth, nor could you ever remember it from before, for it is blocked from your memory. But I tell you, dear ones, that this is where your colors are given to you each time you finish an incarnation. This is where the honor stripe is given for all the universe to see what you have earned. For wherever you go from this point forward, all universal entities will recognize where you have been by these stripes. And this planet of free choice that you volunteer for will be remembered and honored for all times. Many will wish to communicate with you for great lengths of time and ask you for stories of what it was like to be part of the grand project called Earth. Others will stand apart and honor you from a distance, but all will know of your journey, and all will love you for your love and sacrifice. For what happened on Earth affects the entire universe. This is why God honors you so much. For this, dear ones, is the work that you have chosen to do. And although it may sound grandiose to you, there are tens of millions of entities present for this color ceremony, all in the Grand Hall at once, to celebrate the honor that is bestowed on each of you. For this is a new honor stripe, one that has not existed in the universe before. You who incarnate over and over to this planet are a part of a unique set of entities, ones who stood in line for this purpose, and your process fills us, the Kryon, with awe. This is why we sit at your feet. It is why we love you so. Angela stood before the multitudes and accepted her colors, and her angel guide celebrated next to her. And they were honored with other colors as well. It was after the honoring ceremony that Angela was with her friends alone. They began to talk together about the marvelous things they had seen while on the planet Earth. Her friends, the guides, began talking to her as they all figuratively held hands, jumped up and down, frolicked, and played against the background of the galaxy of lights. Angela, do you remember the time that you were hiding from your father in the closet? Do you remember when we sat beside you and held your hands and hugged you? Do you remember that? We fed you energy to get through it. We loved you with unconditional love. We held you up when you were too weak to resist. We embraced your heart when you thought it would break with confusion. And Angela replied, "Oh, yes, I remember that. Dear friends, thank you for your love. I remember that, yes." "Angela," they asked, "do you remember the time your precious mother died and you sat on the stump out in the forest alone and wondered what life had for you, where you might go, and what was to be your future? Do you remember that? We sat next to you at that time and held your hands and gave you energy and loved you. Do you remember the extra tears that were ours and the sharing of the burden? Do you remember that?" And Angela said, "Ah, yes, I remember that, yes." And her friends asked, "Angela, do you remember the wonderful times we had celebrating your wedding and how joyful you were at the time of your youth? Do you remember your glee and your happiness back then? We were holding your hands and hugging you and sending you energy and dancing with you. Do you remember that?" "Oh, yes, dear friends of mine, I remember," Angela replied. "Wasn't that a grand time?" And suddenly Angela was still. She spoke with concern. "Through all of these times, my friends, I never acknowledged your presence even one time. I never told you I appreciated you. Somehow I knew you were there. You are my best friends. But I never said I loved you." And her friends jumped up and said, "Angela, please remember that you were in the duality of humanism. You were in the anointed space of lesson. You were in the midst of the contracted tests. Do not be reproachful with yourself, for you were and are magnificent. The celebration we just experienced honored the journey and the effort. There is no failure in our eyes, only admiration for the journey. Angela understood the appropriateness of their remarks, and yet there was a stirring within her that caused her to say, "There is something more to be done." With that, and with full agreement of the others around her, she said, "Let's do it again! Let's go back to Earth, and this time, maybe this time, I'll see you. I'll know who you are. Oh, and won't that be grand?" So we leave the story of Angela returning to the planning session with her friends to see if she could again participate in the lessons of humanism, this time making it even better. Such are the mechanics of what keeps all of you coming back and back and back. For the work you do for Earth is a work of love and is of great purpose and importance. When you are not in the chairs you sit in now, and not in the bodies you occupy now, you have the balanced mind of God. And you know how honored these things are that we speak of. Ah, dear ones, if you could see what Kryon sees, you would see the room filled with those who love you and who are literally bonded to you. Yes, I am speaking to each one of you. And for those of you who believe you have no awareness of these angels or guides, we give you this gift. Later this night, when you are alone, dare to ask for those who have been with you all these years to give you a small hug. Allow yourself to feel their emotional presence. For a human being to do this is such an honor to the guides and angels who surround you. You have no idea how they will celebrate your request, and a great fluttering of wings will be felt. When you start acknowledging those whom you have carried with you since birth as your best friends, your lives will begin to change. Believe it. And so it is.
There is very little I can add to this story that isn't obvious. Sometimes Kryon gives cryptic parables that need analysis. Sometimes he expounds during the stories to qualify exactly what is being taught. This is one of those parables that contains the focus of our entire work on the planet. And yet the real story here is exemplified by the question, "Have you hugged your angels today?" John the Healer. Here is a story that has the potential to relate to many of you reading these words. For it is understood that those interested in this book may also be facilitators and healers. Not only does it expose many of the things that are happening with healers right now, but this parable also gives the golden rule of healing. Do you know what it is?
John the Healer was a spiritual man. He had a wonderful practice, and he understood his science well. Many came to John and were healed. However, there were always a few who were not. But John was starting to feel uncomfortable. For you see, the new energy was upon him, and he knew the new age was here. John was uncomfortable for a number of reasons. The chief one was the fact that his healing practice was not as successful in his eyes as it had been. In other words, he was not at peace. He was having fewer and fewer healings on his table, and it made John question whether he should be a healer at all. John would meditate often, for he was a powerful meditator. It guided his life, and he understood prayerful communication with God and listened intently to what God said in return. This had always worked before, and he knew it would work again. We're going to let you in on the conversation between John, his guides, and his higher self. This will be enlightening for you and important for the story. As soon as John sat down, his angel guide said, "Oh, John, hello, how are you?" They were very familiar and friendly guides, as all are. John ignored the activity and began his breathing ceremony, not hearing them. Moments later, John was ready, so he was prepared. His head and feet were in the right position. He was facing north. His hands were upright. Oh, God, John began, and his guides interrupted.
Hello, John. We love you.
John said, I need help. Nothing is working. And he named the humans who had come to his healing table by name. He asked, what about this one? I've been working on his back for so long, but nothing is happening. He implored, I pray for help here. Heal this person. Make this happen. Give me this. Do these things. He hardly knew what to ask for. There were so many requests. And his angel guides replied, Oh, John, we love you dearly. All of the power that you need is here, and we stand ready for you. Then they gave him such an incredible wash of love that he knew he was in the presence of God. John felt he had answers, and he believed that things were going to change. But the next time he saw the human with the back trouble, he realized that it had gotten worse. John did everything that he knew how to do, yet there was no healing. Back he went into his meditation with the same results. He would sit for a long time until he felt he was in the right position, and God would be there, and he would feel the love of his angel guides and of his higher self. They would say, Oh, John, indeed we love you. You are so powerful. And John would beg God, Oh, please, show me what to do in my healing room. And so life went on for John in this way. Now, John had a sister. It was almost adding insult to injury that his sister was also troubled with ill health, and that he seemed unable to do anything about it. So he sat with her, and he prayed, and he sent her energy. He used his science, the things that he knew worked, but his sister did not get better. She seemed so troubled all of the time. Finally, after a great amount of time, John had reached his limit. In anger, he stormed into his meditation area, sat down on the couch, and exclaimed, I've had it! Where are you? Hi, John. How are you? His angels immediately answered him. John was so shocked that he almost fell off his meditation pillow. How can you be here so quickly? I'm not ready. We've always been here, John, his guides replied. We're with you even in the healing room. You told me I was powerful, John said. You gave me incredible answers. I felt them in the love that you sent, yet nothing is happening. I'm at my wit's end. What can I do? John's guides faced him and said, Oh, John, we're so glad you came. Listen, it doesn't matter how good the stove is. The food will never be cooked until the burners are hot. Now, John was not a fool. And he asked them, The burners, they're me? Yes, replied the loving angel guides. What can I do? John asked. What is it that you choose to do? I want to be in my contract, stated John loudly. Ah, the fluttering that went on when he said that. For that's all they had to hear. This time, John didn't specify whose back was to be healed. He didn't specify what he specifically needed, or where the power should come from, or on which day he should feel better. John finally said, I want healing for myself. I want to be in my contract. I want my passion to be fulfilled. I want to do what I came here for. Through his angels, God said to him, John, it took so long for you to ask that. You shall have it. It is yours even as you ask. When John arose that night from his meditation, he realized that things had changed, for he had a new peace. Even before he went back to the healing room, he knew things would be different. God had told him that all he had to do was to take care of himself, and everything else would be added. When John walked into the healing room, amazing things started to happen, for he was given further knowledge. I'm going to lay my hands here today, he would say to himself. It's different. No one told me to, but I know it's going to be the right thing to do. Results were immediate. John knew that God was standing over his shoulder, winking at him, saying, "Oh, yes, that's right. Now try this." John was beginning to have results like he had never seen before. He told the ones who came to him to get ready to be healed. He had ceremony with them prior to ever touching them. They thought he was crazy until they were healed. Then even more people started coming to him. John, the powerful healer. And so it was that John went to see his sister. John literally danced into her room, all aglow, knowing that her healing was next. He saw her light up, no more scowls, and yet he hadn't even touched her. "John, what has happened?" she asked him. "I've been so worried about you." Everything stopped. Then John realized that his own torment had spilled over into the very ones he was trying to treat. Time after time, he had come into her room and dragged his own anxiety with him. He had actually hindered her health by his own worry. No wonder nothing worked. "God told me you're going to be healed," John warmly announced. Then he had ceremony with his sister, and he felt the peace of God overwhelm them both. He shed tears of joy in his newfound knowledge and thanked God for such a cooperative effort that brought such wonderful results. His sister was indeed healed because she was ready, and because John had taken care of himself first. And his power and wisdom had increased greatly. John's intent had changed not only his own life, but all those he touched from then on.
What is the key to becoming a powerful healer? It is a question asked by many. Know the science of your craft, then balance yourself. Call for your contract to be fulfilled. This balance creates additional knowledge, better tools, and vastly increased wisdom to use in the new energy. All of these wonderful healing gifts are yours, but they cannot be implemented until you take care of yourself first. When you meditate alone, it is not necessary to beg for the healing of your clients. Save that for group meditations, when you gather with others to send positive energy to those around you and the planet as a whole. Your knowledge is the basis of your healing, and your intent is your power. What you do in personal meditation should be for you. Your contract as a healer is what creates the actual power to clear the way for curing others. The more it is fulfilled, the stronger you will be as the healer. Co-create the total marriage to your contract and watch what happens.
The Father and the Son.
Here is a story that many men will relate to. Are you the father or the son? Even if you are neither, or not even a male, this story is relevant to our planet. It is a story about hatred, the kind that lasts for a lifetime, one of the supreme tests of human nature. Hatred is like a coiled spring. What most people don't know is that when uncoiled, it has a powerful potential to be turned into love.
Now let me tell you the story about the Father and the Son. Let the love saturate every pore of your body as the truth of this real story unfolds to you. Now is the time for the healing that you may have asked for earlier, for healing will come with action. Action is the result of knowledge. And so there was on the planet Earth the Father. Now he was not yet a father, but was looking forward to it. The birth of his child was imminent. He so hoped that the infant would be a boy, for he had great plans for a male child. The father was a carpenter, and he wished to teach the son carpentry. "Oh, I have so many things to teach him," he would say. "I will teach him the tricks of the trade, and I know he will be excited and will carry on the name of our craft within this family." And so, when the birth occurred, and indeed it was a boy child, the father was overwhelmed with joy. "This is my son," he cried to everyone. "This is the one who will carry the honor of the family. This is the one who will have my name.
"This is the great new carpenter, for I will show him everything I know. We will have a grand time together, my son and I." And so as the baby grew up and became older, he loved the father. For the father doted over him, lifting him up at every opportunity, saying, "Son, just wait until I can share these things with you. You're going to love it. You will share our lineage and our craft and our family, and we will be proud of you long after I am gone." But something unusual happened along the way. As life progressed, the son slowly felt smothered by the father's attention, and he began feeling that he had his own path, even though the son did not recognize it in those words. The son began rebelling in small ways. When he reached the teen years, he was not interested anymore in what the father had to say about carpentry or lineage. He said respectfully to the father, "Father, please honor me. I have my own wishes and desires. There are things I'm interested in that are not carpentry." The father could not believe what he was hearing and said, "But son, you don't understand. You see, I'm wiser than you, and I can make decisions for you. Let me show you these things. Trust me. Let me be what I was supposed to be as your teacher, and we will have a grand time, you and I." "I don't see it that way, father. I do not wish to be a carpenter, nor do I wish to hurt your feelings, sir, but I have my own path and wish to go my way." That was the last time the word "sir" was used, for the honor between father and son gradually disintegrated and diminished until it became a void of blackness and darkness. As the son grew even more, he realized that the father continued to badger him to become something he did not wish to be. And so the son left home, not even saying goodbye to the father, but instead leaving a note that said, "Please, leave me alone." The father was appalled. "My son," he thought, "I have spent 20 years waiting for this time. He was supposed to be everything, the carpenter, the grand master of the craft with my name. I am ashamed. He has ruined my life." The son also thought, "This man has ruined my childhood and shaped me into something I had not chosen to be, and I do not choose to have affection for him." And so there was indeed anger and hatred between the father and the son, and it remained all of their lives. And when the son had a child of his own, a beautiful daughter, the son thought, "Perhaps, just perhaps, I should invite my father to see this child of his lineage." But then he reconsidered, thinking, "No, this is the father who ruined my childhood and hates me. I am not going to share anything with him." And so the father never got to see the grandchild. And so it goes that in his 83rd year, the father died. And on his deathbed, he looked back and he said, "Perhaps now, as my death is near, I will call for my son." And so in the moment of wisdom, feeling death closing in, he sent for the son. The answer came back from the son, saying, "I don't care about you, for you ruined my life. Stay away from me." And then the son added, "I will be glad of your passing." Oh, there was a tremendous energy of hatred in the mind and on the lips of the father as he gasped his last breath, thinking about how he could have had a son so despicable. The son lived a good life, and it was also in his 80s that he passed on, surrounded by a family who loved him dearly, mourning for his essence that would no longer walk the planet. And this, dear ones, is where the story really begins.
for the sun passed to the cave of creation. He took the three-day journey where he picked up his essence and his name and moved on to the hall of honor. And he spent a long time in adoration there, where literally millions of entities in a stadium that you cannot begin to fathom applauded and honored him for what he had gone through while on your planet. You see, dear ones, all of you have been there before, but we cannot show you this, for it would spoil your time here and give you too much remembrance. But you will be there again someday to pick up the next color, for these colors are seen by everyone in the universe when they meet you. Your colors are an identity badge indicating that you were a warrior of the light on the planet Earth. It is hard for you to conceive of, I know, at this moment as I tell you the story, but it is true nonetheless. You have no idea how important these unique Earth badges are. Someday you'll remember my words when you meet me in the audience at the Hall of Honor. And so the sun was there receiving his accolades, and his new colors were placed into his energy to spin into his other colors to show those around him who he was. And when this time was over, the sun, in the cloak of the real universal entity that he was, entered into an area where he immediately saw his best friend, Daniel, the one whom he had left to come to the planet Earth. And he saw Daniel from across the void and exclaimed, "It is you! I have missed you so!" And they came together, so to speak, and embraced, intermingling their energies. And so it was with great joy that they spoke about old universal times that they had enjoyed together before the sun went to Earth. Frolicking about the universe with his friend Daniel, one day he said to him, "You know, Daniel, you made a wonderful father on Earth. My best friend, you made a wonderful son," replied Daniel. "Wasn't it amazing what we went through as humans? How complete the duality was that separated us, best friends, while we were on the Earth?" "How could something be like that?" the former son asked. "Oh, because the veil was so strong that we didn't know who we really were," answered the former father. "But the planning worked so well, didn't it?" asked the former son. "Yes, it did," replied Daniel, "for we never once had a glimmer of truth as to who we really were." So we leave these two entities as they head toward the next Earth planning session. And we overhear one saying, "Oh, let's do it again. Only this time I will be the mother and you be the daughter."
This precious story is told especially for some of you reading this now who have yet to recognize the gift of what is taking place in your life, or have yet to recognize your best friend. Look at the love it took for these entities to agree to go through this drama. The story gives you an example of anger and hatred, but they are only karmic attributes. They are fears to be broken. And I will tell you now that had either the son or the father during their lifetime recognized who they were, they would have walked into the fear of the hatred and the anger and come out with love. The other one could not have resisted it, and things would have been different for both of them. This is the New Age human lesson. Regardless of what you think is in front of you, and the way it appears, it may only be a paper-thin test, ready to be dissolved and converted into love and peaceful compromise. Do you have unresolvable anger at another? It's a trick of karma and a lesson for you, for you also know of the energy it takes to keep it going, and the way it perpetuates itself, seemingly without you. Isn't it time to release it? Love is the greatest power of the universe. This love energy isn't just the thing that gives you peace and empowerment. Its energy is also responsible for your silence in the face of accusation, the wisdom and discernment to know that you help plan everything around you. Strangely, this love is also responsible for the most unenlightened things that you can imagine. For the source of your karmic setup is also love. Sometimes it may take an odd face, such as hate and anger, towards a family member.
But love is the king of the plan and lurks waiting for you to discover it within the solution of your fear. It has sustenance and thickness. It has logic and reason. It is the essence of the universe, and it has been passed to you within the words of this story.
Woe in the big wind. God has promised us that being in our contract means being in our passion. It also means that we will be in the right place at the right time for everything that we have planned for ourselves in this lifetime. Here is our last story, one that might make you think twice about what you feel is the right place at the right time.
We have spoken before of the individual entity who we call woe. Now, woe is a name we give to this human walking on the planet. Woe isn't meant to represent a male or female, for when you are not here, you are neither. But for the purpose of this story, and to make it easy to tell, woe will be a male. For this is the story and the journey of woe in the big wind. Woe was an enlightened individual and lived on a very small island with many others. Woe lived a good life, for he was indeed on a spiritual path. We would call Woe a warrior of the light, for Woe meditated and followed God. He had fine children with whom he taught the essence of God through his love. Woe was greatly loved by his neighbors, for they recognized that he was a good man. And so we find Woe living on the island, and daily Woe would say, "Dear God, I love you so. I want so much to be in my contract. The right place at the right time. That's what I want." As Woe moved forward in his life, year after year, he would daily go down to the beach, and with the sound of the surf crashing in his ears, he would get as close to the water as he could without getting wet, and there he would sit. Woe would say, "Dear God, put me right where I belong. I don't care if it takes me away from here. I want to be in my sweet spot, my contract." Now you see, Woe was doing this correctly, and he was greatly honored for this. Woe would also say, "And in this new age, dear God, there is something I would really like as a gift. I know there are some who never get this, but if it is appropriate, please let me see my angel guides, even just once." So now you know the inner workings of Woe's life and his mind. This is who Woe was. Now a great storm approached this island that had a tremendous ferocity. Woe was frightened, for it appeared as the storm was going to pass right through his home. In hundreds of years, there had never been a storm like this, for it was powerful indeed. As it approached, there were many who left the island. But Woe remained, knowing full well that he would be in the right place at the right time, just as he had co-created. Any minute, Woe expected the wind to miraculously change course. But you see, it didn't. Instead, it got worse and worse. So residents were sequestered in their homes and told, "Don't go out, you will be harmed if you do." So the folk stayed in their houses, and they watched the winds come and the waters rise. They saw their houses start to disintegrate and the pieces of other homes fly by. They were very afraid, but Woe was silent. He did not talk to God about what was happening. You see, Woe was angry. In fact, he was mad, for Woe felt that he had been betrayed. "How many years do I ask for one thing, and now when the time arrives, I don't receive it," complained Woe. The winds grew stronger and Woe grew angrier. "God did not deliver my family and me from this inappropriate place," yelled Woe in desperation as he heard and felt the back porch of his home tear from its very attachments. Then the power failed. Woe heard the trucks come through the street to pick up the people. The speakers in the trucks announced, "You are not safe. Get in these trucks while you still can. We are going to take you to the school where the building is solid. There you will have safe shelter." And so it was that the large trucks went about gathering all the people of the island, taking them to the various schools and churches. Wo ended up in one of the largest schools that was near his home. Once there, he looked into his neighbors' wet faces, all blank and fearful. But in Wo's eyes, there was only anger at God that he should find himself in such a situation. Everyone made their way down the stairways to the basement of the great building. As they crouched in the cold corners where they thought it would be safe, indeed the power failed there too, and they were in the dark. Out came the candles, but then the water started coming in, and the wind started tearing at the very fabric of the school building itself. They started hearing the groaning of the cement and of the wood. They huddled in the dark, terrified, making no sounds of their own at all. Then Wo came to an astonishing conclusion. He realized that he was not afraid. He was very angry, but he was not afraid. He looked around and saw all of those huddled down the hallways. They were in ankle-deep rising water, freezing without any heat or even candlelight, since the candles only lasted for an hour. He also saw their terror. For many that night felt the entire group was going to die. How could it not be so? For they were told that the eye of the storm was not even upon them, and that they were going to experience winds that were even worse. If the school disintegrated, they would surely be at the mercy of the elements of wind and rain. No human that night had ever experienced the power of nature like they were experiencing now. And so Wo stood from the place where he had been seated in anger. He hugged his family and said, "There is work to do. You will be safe." And he looked into the eyes of his children and said, "Look, there is no fear in my eyes, because I have been promised that we are going to be safe." Then Wo left and began going from neighbor to neighbor and from group to group. He told them of his love for God, and he told them that God had never failed him. He told them that they would be safe, and imparted on them the love that could only come from an enlightened human being. As he left each group, he saw that the terror also left, and like a black cloud had dissipated, they were left with hope. Some of the group started singing songs. So instead of terror and the silence of fear, the sound of singing replaced it. Some of the group started laughing by telling humorous stories of their lives, and their fear diminished. The terror left. Wo, as he made his way from group to group, did his work that night. And like some kind of miracle, the strongest winds never arrived. Instead, the storm reversed itself and went on its way, slowly diminishing instead of intensifying. So just about the time Wo's work was done, the storm had abated enough that people could return to their homes. The sun was coming out, and Wo realized that they had been there all night. As they walked outside, the wind had almost totally died down. How quickly it retreated. The birds were singing, and the sun came out, and everyone made their way back to their homes. Oh, and some of them had great sorrow that their homes had been destroyed. And oh yes, Wo was among all of his neighbors, seeing that his roof and his porch were gone, and the water had come in and ruined many things. So it was in the weeks that followed that the rebuilding began, and it went smoothly. Slowly on the island, a story began unfolding. You see, there were news reports of what had happened that night in the school. People were telling stories of that fearful night, saying, "There was a man and his associates who came to us in the dark, at the worst moments of our fear. They told us that we were safe, and they gave us hope. They replaced the darkness with love and peacefulness. They brought sanctuary to our terrified consciousness, and they also brought humor. They gave us song, and it changed us that night, for we were no longer afraid. Our children responded first, for we saw in the eyes of the children the fact that they were no longer terrified, and then we relaxed. the man's name was Woe. Group after group reported this amazing event, and to Woe's embarrassment, they asked him to come to a ceremony where he would be honored. And so begrudgingly, Woe went to the ceremony and heard the testimony of neighbors telling how he and his associates had helped that night. After the ceremony, Woe went to the beach where he sat down by the water. Then Woe realized what being at the right place at the right time meant. He realized that all of his prayers and all of his co-creative ability as a human being in the new age had come to fruition. You see, Woe had prayed to be in the right place at the right time, and that's exactly where he was. He realized that his prayers had been answered 100%. Then Woe wept, for he realized that 100% co-creation meant that his guides had also been there that night. Every group of neighbors had seen three: Woe and his two associates. Woe knew that he had gone into the darkness alone to help his neighbors that stormy evening, so he thought. Yet everyone had seen his angels. God had answered his prayers, all of them. So, although Woe was not aware of it at the time, his angelic guides had been seen clearly in the candlelight. His neighbors had described them, and through the voices of those he helped, Woe saw his angels. Oh, it's true that he lost his home, and it's true that some possessions had been destroyed, but the contract that he agreed to before he came had been accomplished, and everything paled in comparison to that. All of the co-creative prayers had been centered around being in the right place at the right time. Woe realized that God had honored him with a complete, full miracle of co-creation. From that time forward, Woe knew what it meant to co-create and pray for his contract. He knew that it did not mean that he would not be spared all of the tests. It did not mean he would not be present when the earth shook. It meant that he would be in his sweet spot, and he would be in total peace when these things took place. And it meant that he would be available for facilitation of other human beings when it was needed the most. It changed his life, for he discovered his passion, that of being able to bring peace into the lives of others in the right place at the right time.
When I agreed to do the Cryon work, I expected that I would be directly in my contract. I expected my sweet spot of passion to allow me to be in the right place at the right time, for all of the things to be perfect and appropriate. That is what God promised. In my innocence of the way that spiritual things work, I didn't understand that being in my sweet spot required the dark tests that came with it. I loved the fact that tens of thousands of New Age people all over the planet appreciated the books and wrote to tell me so. This indeed was a sweet spot. I was astounded to receive an invitation to the Society for Enlightenment and Transformation, the group within the United Nations, and to actually go there and speak, to meet such wonderful planetary light workers. I was amazed when the Cryon National magazine took off and thousands subscribed, and when My America Online folder became the most popular New Age venue in their history. Then came the attacks on the work, and like Woe, I became angry. How can I carry around a white paint can for years, and suddenly some call it black? How can one light worker attack another? Where is the love? I couldn't understand why the name of Cryon was being seen by some as evil and treacherous. The misquotes, the twisted words. Why would someone do such a thing? Now, in retrospect, I see that God put the integrity of the work right in the fire. It caused people to rethink what was being offered. It made discernment a key issue in this new age. It made us all think twice about believing just any message that happened to come from any entity. Through all the rethinking, Cryon emerged as the love-filled messenger that he said he was, and thousands throughout the country reaffirmed it in writing and in verbal thanks. I had gone through my big wind, and had sat on the beach with woe and also wept with the joy of knowing that I was exactly where I was supposed to be.